Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. The National Broadcasting Company brings you a special broadcast from Monticello, the home of Thomas Jefferson near Charlottesville, Virginia. While the people of the nation lay aside their work to celebrate Independence Day, the President of the United States visits the home of Thomas Jefferson, author of the Declaration of Independence. From the front steps of this old mansion, the President's words will be broadcast throughout the land. The President motored into Charlottesville last evening, coming direct from Big Meadows in the Blue Ridge Mountains, where he dedicated the new Shenandoah National Park. He spent the night at the Farmington Country Club. Leaving there about an hour ago, he was driven through the campus of the University of Virginia and through the streets of Charlottesville. Virginians, many of them, have made the early morning trek to this historic national shrine, and now they're gathered here on the front lawn, eagerly awaiting the moment when the President will speak. An old-timer has told me that this is the biggest crowd to assemble here since President Grover Cleveland spoke at the University of Virginia during his first administration. Many distinguished guests are present on the speaker's platform, among them the Secretary of the Interior, the Honorable Harold L. Ickes, the Honorable James A. Farley, Postmaster General of the United States, His Excellency George C. Peary, Governor of Virginia, the two United States Senators from Virginia, the Honorable Harry F. Byrd and the Honorable Carter Glass, and also quite a few of the Virginia representatives in Congress, including the Honorable A. Willis Robertson and Representatives Patrick H. Drury, Schuyler O. Bland, Howard W. Smith, J.W. Flanagan, Jr., and Colgate W. Darden. The President's visit today at Monticello is at the invitation of the Thomas Jefferson Memorial Foundation, which is preserving the estate as a national memorial and patriotic shrine. Mr. Stuart G. Gibney, President of the Foundation, will preside. It is our pleasure to introduce Mr. Gibney.
Mr. President, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, the Thomas Jefferson Memorial Foundation welcomes you all to Monticello. The foundation was organized not only to restore and maintain this beautiful home as a national shrine, but also to preserve and perpetuate the principles for which Mr. Jefferson contended. Mr. President, we are honored to have you as our guest. You have been a member of our Board of Governors since the organization of the foundation. In 1926, you served as Vice Chairman of the Jefferson Centennial Committee, which held exercises here 10 years ago today, upon the 100th anniversary of Mr. Jefferson's death. Through your efforts and those of Senator Glass, the government appropriated the money for and built our new road in the grounds of Monticello. Under your leadership, Congress enacted in June the bill providing for memorials of Thomas Jefferson in the city of Washington. For such a memorial, we have labored since our organization. For the great assistance you have continuously given us in keeping green the memory of Thomas Jefferson, we are deeply grateful. But for more than this, Mr. President, we acclaim you for the devotion you have shown in your public life to the cause of the common people whom Jefferson served and trusted. He fought for equal opportunity for all and against all special privileges. You have been his worthy successor in the valiant fight. In the valiant fight you have made for these principles, and for this we honor you and wish you continued success, health, and happiness. Ladies and gentlemen, it's my privilege to present to you Honorable George C. Peary, Governor of Virginia.
President, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, 110 years ago today, the master of Monticello answered the summons of the final messenger. In his dying moments, his mind went back to the great event which happened just 50 years before, and his last audible words were, "Is this the fourth?" Today, another 4th of July has come. All America celebrates the day because it marks another anniversary of the birth of our republic. We in Virginia join with the other throngs throughout the land in celebration of the happy event. It means much to us in Virginia. It is a part of our history. Not long before that memorable first Independence Day, a great Virginian, tired of oppression and fired with an enthusiasm and love for freedom, had delivered his famous speech in Old St. John's Church in Richmond that lighted the fires of revolution throughout America. Another Virginian took up the torch of liberty and wrote the Declaration of Independence. It was signed by other great Virginians. And so, we not only commemorate this historic event of Independence Day, but we also honor the great men of our state who participated therein and made glorious the history of those early years. It seems especially fitting that we should gather today at historic Monticello, planned and builded by Jefferson, at which he lived and died, and over which his spirit still broods. Here we may learn something more of the life and character of this great philosopher, his love for democracy, and of his faith in the worth of every individual man. He was an apostle of freedom, a steadfast believer in equal opportunity, and a friend of the common man. His friend and disciple, James Madison, wrote of him after he had passed on, "He lives and will live in the memory and gratitude of the wise and good, as a luminary of science, as a votary of liberty, as a model of patriotism, and as a benefactor of mankind." Woodrow Wilson said of him, "The immortality of Thomas Jefferson does not lie in any one of his achievements, but in his attitude toward mankind." To the Virginians present, it is unnecessary for me to say that they are welcome to this historic and sacred spot. They know it already. To those who have come from other states, we vouchsafe to you a hearty welcome. Our gates are always open to you. Some of you come from states that are daughters of the old Commonwealth, and we rejoice when you come back to us. Our chief joy, shared in common by all here present, comes from the fact that today there has journeyed to Monticello, the home of the great liberal of the past, another great liberal of today, the President of the United States. We extend to him and to all of you our warmest welcome to Virginia.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now my proud privilege to present to you the Honorable Carter Glass from Virginia. Who will introduce to you the President of the United States. Senator Glass.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is needless for me to say that I derive very genuine satisfaction from the brief part in this program which has been assigned to me. While it is not essential, personally, it is most agreeable. As has been indicated by the governor of Virginia, we are here assembled to pay tribute to the author of the Declaration of Independence, of the Virginia Statute for Religious Freedom, and the founder of the University of Virginia. These were their accomplishments that Mr. Jefferson most treasured and by which he hoped to perpetuate his fame. But there were many other things done by Jefferson of vast and lasting importance. It might be said of him, as was said by Sir Francis Bacon of himself, he took all knowledge for his province, and he explored every problem that offered happiness and prosperity to mankind. He had the most fertile mind of any man who ever lived before him or has ever lived since. His wisdom was and is now recognized the world over. He was especially a master of the science of government, and his life was devoted to the enunciation and the practice of principles of representative government. Those principles will live as long as eternity. And this being so, how peculiarly appropriate it is that the Chief Magistrate of this nation, a successor of Thomas Jefferson in that great position, should come to this place where Jefferson lived and where his remains now lie to do homage to the sage of Monticello. From his visit, I am sure he will get renewed inspiration in his great responsibility. Virginia greets him for the high position he holds. Virginia greets him because of the courage and the incomparable patience he has manifested in the discharge of his difficult duty. Virginia greets him especially because he professes that love of humanity and of the plain people especially that characterized the life of Thomas Jefferson. And I personally have infinite pleasure in presenting to this audience the President of the United States, Honorable Franklin D. Roosevelt.
Senator Glass, Governor Perry, Mr. Gibney,
ladies and gentlemen, as my old friend Carter Glass has so well suggested, I have come here today to renew my homage to the sage of Monticello. It seems to me that it was symbolic that Thomas Jefferson should live on this mountaintop of Monticello. On a mountaintop, all paths unite, and Jefferson was the meeting point of all of the vital forces of his day. There are periods in history when one man seems great because those who stand beside him are small. Jefferson was great in the presence of many great and free men. When we read of the Patriots of 1776 and the Fathers of the Constitution, we are taken into the presence of men who caught the fire of greatness from one another, and all became elevated above the common run of mankind. The source of their greatness was the stirring of a new sense of freedom. They were tasting the first fruit of self-government and freedom of conscience. They had broken away from a system of peasantry, away from indentured servitude, and they could build for themselves a new economic independence. Theirs were not the gods of things as they were, but the gods of things as they ought to be. And so, as Monticello itself so well proved, they use new means and new models to build new structures. I've always thought that of all the builders of those days, it is perhaps generally to be conceded that Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Jefferson possessed what may be roughly described as the most fertile mind. Franklin was no stranger to science, to no theory of philosophy, to no avenue of invention. Jefferson had those qualities in equal part, but with greater opportunity. In the days of peace which followed the Revolution, Jefferson was enabled more fully to carry theory into practice. Farmer, lawyer, mechanic, scientist, architect, philosopher, statesman, he encompassed the full scope of the knowledge of his time, and his life was one of the richest diversity. To him, knowledge and ideal were fuel to be used to feed the fires of his own mind, not just wood to be left neatly piled in the wood box. More than any historic home in America, Monticello appeals to me as an expression of the personality of its builder. In the design, not of the whole alone, but of every room, of every part of every room, in the very furnishing which Jefferson devised on his own drawing board and made in his own workshop, in all of that that speaks ready capacity for detail and, above all, creative genius. He was a great gentleman. He was a great commoner.
And my friends, the two are not incompatible. He applied the culture of the past to the needs and the life of the America of his day. His knowledge of history spurred him to inquire into the reason and the justice of laws and habits and institutions. His passion for liberty led him to interpret and adapt them in order to better the lot of mankind. Shortly before taking the office of president, he wrote to a friend, "I have sworn on the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of man." His life served that consecration. Constantly he labored to enlarge the freedom of the human mind, to destroy the bondage imposed on it by ignorance, poverty, and political and religious intolerance. On one day of his long life, he gave to the world a declaration of independence on behalf of political freedom for himself and his fellow Americans. But his declaration of independence for the human mind was a continuing achievement, renewed and reiterated every day of his whole life. Yes, 160 years have passed since the 4th of July, 1776. On that day, Thomas Jefferson was 33 years old. His imagination, his enthusiasm, and his energy, the qualities that youth offers in every generation, were symbolic of that generation of men who not only made a nation in the wealth of their imagination and energy, but because their youthful wings had not been clipped, were able to grow with the nation and guide it in wisdom throughout their lives. And so through all the intervening years, America has lived and grown under the system of government established by Jefferson and his generation. As nations go, we live under one of the oldest continuous forms of democratic government in the whole world. And in that sense, we are old. But the world has never had as much human ability as it needs. And a modern democracy in particular needs above all things the continuance of the spirit of youth. Our problems of 1936 call us greatly for the continuation of imagination and energy and capacity for responsibility, as did the age of Thomas Jefferson and his fellows. Democracy needs now, today, as it found then, men developed to the limit of their capacity through education for ultimate responsibility. Energies, decisions in our individual and community and national lives, all of these recurring emergencies are the stuff out of which national character is made. Preparation of the mind, preparation of the spirit of our people for such emergencies, for such decisions, is the best available insurance against the security and the development of our democratic institutions. Was the spirit of such men as Jefferson, the spirit of a golden age gone now and never to be repeated in our history? Was the feeling of fundamental freedom which lighted the fire of their ability, a miracle we shall never see again. That is not my belief. It is not beyond our power to relight that sacred fire. There are no limitations upon the nation's capacity to obtain and maintain true freedom. No limitations except the strength of our nation's desire and determination. On the hillside, below where we stand, is the tomb of Thomas Jefferson. He was given many high offices in state and nation, but the words recorded above his grave, chosen by himself, are only these. Here was buried Thomas Jefferson, author of the Declaration of Independence, of the Statute of Virginia for Religious Freedom, and father of the University of Virginia. The honors which other men had given him were unimportant. The opportunities he had given to other men to become free were all that really counted.
And with the playing of the national anthem by the Municipal Band of Charlottesville, we conclude this special Independence Day broadcast. You've heard the President of the United States speaking from historic Monticello. He was introduced by the Honorable Carter Glass, Senior United States Senator from Virginia. The President is leaving now, proceeding back through the mansion to the north entrance, and there he will once more get into his automobile. The President's address was made at the invitation of the Thomas Jefferson Memorial Foundation, whose president, Mr. Stuart G. Gibney, presided. Governor George C. Peary of Virginia welcomed the President and the other guests to the Old Dominion. While he spoke, the President was flanked on both sides by an honor color guard of the Monticello Guard, the oldest continuous military unit in the United States, dressed in their colonial uniform. Mr. Roosevelt will motor to Richmond this afternoon, there to board the yacht Potomac and proceed down the James River. Sunday morning, the President and Mrs. Roosevelt will dock at Jamestown and attend services at Bruton Parish Church. in Williamsburg. Thence, the President's route will take him to Yorktown, where he will board the yacht for the return trip to Washington. The crowd now is leaving the lawn in front of Monticello, and our broadcast comes to a close. This program from Monticello, the historic home of Thomas Jefferson near Charlottesville, Virginia, announced by Carlton Smith, has reached you through the National Broadcasting Company.
Now we listen as the band plays for us another of the stirring John Philip Sousa marches. This one is Semper Fidelis. Thank you. And finally, the King Cotton March of John Philip Sousa. You've been listening to a brief interval of march music from the pen of the great march king, John Philip Sousa. You heard his Stars and Stripes Forever, Semper Fidelis, and the King Cotton March. This is the National Broadcasting Company, RCA Building, Radio City.